rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded? Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, is Iran next? Is Iran next? Welcome, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast on radio stations in California to North Carolina, streaming down from outer space in the Sirius satellite radio system, beaming around the planet on radiopower.org, whiterosesociety.org, Live 365, their program American FM. German filmmaker Fritz Kipler, from the World War II era, German filmmaker Fritz Kipler said one of Goebbels' most effective... He was one of Goebbels' most effective propagandists. Once said that two steps were necessary to promote a big lie so the majority of the people in the nation would believe it. The first was to reduce an issue to a simple black and white choice that, quote, even the most feeble-minded could understand, end quote. The second was to repeat the oversimplification over and over. If these two steps were followed, Fritz Kipler said, Goebbels' most effective propagandist, people would always come to believe the big lie. In Kipler's day, the best example of this application of the principle was his 1940 movie Campaign in Poland, which argued that the Polish people were suffering under tyranny, a tyranny that could someday threaten Germany, and that the German people could either allow this cancer to fester or preemptively liberate, and this is in quotes, preemptively liberate Poland, end of quote. Hitler took the, to again quote Goebbels' right-hand man, Fritz Kipler, Hitler took the, quote, strong and decisive path, end quote, to liberate Poland, even though after the invasion, little evidence was found that Poland represented any threat whatsoever to the powerful Third Reich. The movie was Hitler's way of saying that invading Poland was the right thing to do, and that in retrospect, he would have done it again. The big lie is alive and well today in the United States of America, and what's most troubling about it is the basic premise that underlies its use, and that is that it's just an okay thing to do. We had George W. Bush, before we went into Iraq, saying,
the evidence indicates that Iraq is reconstituting its nuclear weapons program. Saddam Hussein has held numerous meetings with Iraqi nuclear scientists, a group he calls his nuclear mujahideen, his nuclear holy warriors, facing clear evidence of peril. We cannot wait for the final proof, the smoking gun that could come in the form of a mushroom cloud.
And now comes Jerome Corzi, co-author of Unfit to Command, the Swift Boat Vet book that so thoroughly trashed John Kerry, who has a new book out, Nuclear Iran. And Jerome Corzi, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Tom, great pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
Thank you. I suspect that you're going to follow down the same road here that George took us to war in Iraq with in Iran. Is that what you're up to these days?
Well, no, Tom. The Atomic Iran, was written, yes, to call attention to the threat of nuclear capability that Iran almost has, this terrorist country. They're imminent. They're about one step away from being able to develop a bomb.
Aren't about 50 other countries in the world that have nuclear reactors?
Yes, but these guys are different. They have a clear history of being criminal terrorists and killing people around the world, including in their own country. And I'm not.
You're talking about when the Shah was running Iran?
Right, but I'm not advocating war here, Tom. I think that's the worst thing we could do. By the whole book, Atomic Iran, does not call for war. Discusses that it could happen, but I've got a whole different plan wanting to bring about peaceful change within Iran. That's what I think needs to happen.
Okay.
In fact, I've created a foundation, the Iran Freedom Foundation. I've gotten so deeply interested in this and committed personally. And on the 16th of May, I've been working with Iranians all around the world. On the 16th of May, we're going to have a huge rally in Philadelphia at the Liberty Bell, and I'm going to walk from Philadelphia to Washington, D.C. I'm a 58-year-old guy. That's a 128-mile walk. And we're setting it up to broadcast day by day, 2 weeks.
Well, it'll probably be good for your heart. But I got to say, Jerome, you know, the you were on our program, in fact, during the whole Kerry thing. And the, I don't know another word, the sleazy stuff that you were throwing out, the stuff in your books, the misrepresentations, the mischaracterizations, why should anybody believe you about this?
Well, you know, Tom, it's interesting. If those were mistakes...
And, by the way, what made you an expert on Iraq? You were claiming before that at least you had a co-author for the Kerry book who claimed that, or who did know John Kerry back in the 60s. But, you know, what qualifies you to write about Iraq, or Iran, rather?
I had a 25-year history of writing on anti-terrorism and political violence, and I have a top secret. I had a top secret clearance from the federal government to advise on anti-terrorism.
Was this when you were calling Arabs towel heads?
No, you're taking things out of context that I wrote again. I write in this book very clearly that Islam is a fully legitimate religion, except for the terrorists like the mullahs in Iran who've stolen the religion and have hijacked it for criminal purposes.
So you've changed your mind on that?
No.
You now disagree with the Pope?
No. You've taken things out of context that I've written again. I said with the Pope, that's a whole other subject. I only want the Pope to take care of the crisis in the church in the United States, and I hope this new Pope will do it.
Well, this new Pope is on record as saying that the only legitimate religion in the entire world is Catholicism.
Well, he may say that. I'm saying...
And you seem to imply that in your previous writings, not necessarily Catholicism, but Christianity in general is certainly dissing Islam.
Well, sir, you're going to have to give me a chance to answer these
things. Okay.
I'm saying to you that Islam is a legitimate religion. 1 billion people in the world believe in it, except when it gets hijacked by these criminals who use it for their own criminal purposes, these terrorists.
But when you said that Muslims like to have sex with little boys, you weren't talking about terrorists. I mean, this was long before terrorism was even on the screen.
You're taking all the context, all things that I wrote to draw attention to problems. I always wrote those things in the context of particular problems I was pointing to, not for the religion as a whole. Now, you can take things out of context if you want, but it isn't what I said, and I know in my heart that's not what I wrote and not what I believe. You can attack me for it, but it's not a fair attack.
Well, I'm just quoting your own words.
No, you're quoting them out of context.
Well, quoting words out of context, if the context is 10,000, 20,000, 50,000 words, and you want to quote something somebody says, every quote, Jerome, come on, Jerome, every quote is out of context.
I'll defend every single one of those. If you want to look at some of the things such as...
Okay, so defend your saying that Muslims just like to have sex with little boys.
Okay, what I was attacking there was things such as the markets in places like Afghanistan where they trade little boys. I think that's... I'm unless you, sir, want to defend pedophilia, I'm opposed to it. And I oppose that. I'll stand up and oppose that wherever it happens.
Well, the big markets for that sort of thing are in Southeast Asia, like Saipan, where Tom DeLay went over and took an all-expenses-paid trip with Jack Abramoff, where the sex trade was happening, including the child sex trade in Saipan, specifically to shoot down legislation that would have eliminated that trade.
Well, I'm opposed to the sex trade.
So you're opposed to Tom DeLay's activities?
No, sir, I don't know that particular trip. I don't have a clue about that trip.
Okay.
But I'm telling you that I am opposed to sex trade in children all across the world.
Okay, well, let's get back to the bigger issue of whether or not Iran... You're representing Iran basically as a terrorist state and a threat.
Yes.
What about the fact that Iran has one of the largest pro-democracy movements within its nation in terms of the percentage of the population of any of the Arab states?
Well, 95% of the people in Iran want the government gone. They want these mullahs out. And you'll see protest after protest, including ones that happened in the last 2 weeks. At the same time, the mullahs shut down, they've closed 200 or 300 newspapers. They put internet bloggers in prison and they disappear.
Okay, now we have done the same thing in Iraq, have we not?
Well, you know, in Iraq, I mean...
We have shut down dozens of newspapers. We have put bloggers in prison.
I'm opposed to putting bloggers in prison wherever it happens.
So you're opposed to the Bush administration's actions in Iraq?
I'm opposed to anything
that Paul Bremer did.
Anything that suppresses free press, I'm opposed to.
Okay, so you're on the record as being opposed to Paul Bremer and George W. Bush's actions in Iraq.
We have to look at the specific ones. Now, if you've got Al Jazeera, or let's take Al-Manar. Al-Manar, which is the Hezbollah TV, is suicide TV, and it's preaching suicide. Now, if the TV is gained to only do criminal activity, if they're protesting...
Jerome, you're just preaching fear here. I mean,
no,
you know,
I'm
sure it goes really well on right-wing talk shows, but it's like we're not really all that interested in being terrified.
Well, you know, you can characterize me that way if you want to, but I'm calling for peaceful change here, not war, and I'm bringing myself... Go look at the 9/11 Commission report, pages 240, 241, Hezbollah created by Iran, and Iran working hand in hand with Al Qaeda to bring the muscle terror.
So hang on, just a second. You just brought 9/11 into this thing, and Iran had nothing to do with 9/11.
Go read page 240, 241 of the 9/11 committee report. The headline says Hezbollah and Iran work with Al Qaeda to bring the muscle terrorists of 9/11 into the United States through Iran. It's in the 9/11 committee report, and that's no right-wing document.
Okay, so the Iranian, I will give you that. Actually, I do remember that. I don't, frankly, know
if
that was.
I'm honored that you gave me a point.
I don't know if that was the official position of the Iranian government,
almost,
or if it just happened.
I'm amazed you gave me a point.
I'm trying to be truthful here. I'm trying to just lay this thing out.
And I didn't know you were trying. I misinterpreted. I thought you were just using anything you could to discredit me.
No, I'm not. I really believe that what you're doing is running around trying to scare the bejesus out of people, and I'm not sure that if you're doing it because you're trying to hype the sales of a book, or if you're doing it because one of these right-wing bunches or one of the defense contractors part of the oil industry is paying you off, or if deep down in your heart you really are one of those kind of paranoid, terrified conservatives who see threats in the world and we have to be proactive. But I personally am more of the mind of George Washington, who said we at all costs must avoid foreign entanglements.
The
big foreign entanglement we have right now is the fact that we are addicted to oil. You want peace in the Middle East, stop buying their oil.
I'm going to give you an alternative to where I really am, and that is I see here people who have attacked us, including Iran. You just gave me the point. Iran was involved with Al-Qaeda in the 9/11 plot. And I'm telling you that these people have been preaching that they wanted to...
I did not say that Iran attacked us.
No, but I'm saying Iran, page 240, a 9/11 report.
Yeah,
Iran worked together to bring the 9/11 terrorists through Al-Qaeda into the United States.
But, okay.
I'm saying they're planning now to do an atomic 9/11. I'm not calling for war.
But you're running ads. You want to run ads that show, in fact, you've got your ad on the web. You want to run ads that show New York City being hit by a nuclear weapon from Iran. And
Right. You
tell me you're not trying to terrify the American people?
You can see that on iranfree.org, and the Homeland Security Department says the exact same thing. 2 weeks ago, they released a report which says that our cities could be attacked by an atomic weapon brought in by terrorists and delivered into our cities through a truck. That's Homeland Security saying that. I'm just showing you graphically what Homeland Security said was a threat.
Homeland Security has been, ever since George W. Bush figured out that he could use 9/11 to his political advantage, every time the news cycle has gone negative on Bush, and right now it's gone negative with regard to Social Security, all of a sudden Homeland Security comes out, and it was Tom Ridge, and you're going, oh my God, we've got a problem. Look at this. That branch up, rack on, crank up, excuse me, the terror alert. And it just seems to me, Jerome, that you're part of that. But, you know, if our listeners want to make up their own mind, toss out a website.
Iranfree.org.
Iranfree.org. Jerome Corsi, the author of a new book, Unfit to Command, now Nuclear Iran. Jerome, thanks for being with us today.
Great honor to be with you always.
Okay, 20 minutes past the hour. It's Tom Hartman.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Propagandy, propagandy. If you want to fool the folks, it comes in handy. If you want to tell some lies, pull the wool over their eyes, you can do it with propagandy.
The evidence indicates that Iraq is reconstituting its nuclear weapons program.
You can liberate.
Saddam Hussein has held numerous meetings with Iraqi nuclear scientists.
You're gonna
a group he calls his nuclear mujahideen.
Depend on propaganda.
His nuclear holy warriors. Facing clear evidence of peril. We cannot wait for the final proof. The smoking gun. It could come in the form of a mushroom cloud.
Just simplify the complex. Repeat, repeat, repeat. Propaganda.
And welcome back, my friends. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, toll-free nationwide. Bill in Ohio on the line. Hey, Bill, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up, Bill?
I was just listening to your guest there, and he referenced page 240, 241.
Right.
In the 9/11 report as referring to Iran and Hezbollah.
Yeah, I remember some vague discussion of that at some point, but I don't have the book in front of me, so I couldn't throw that back at him. But
what? I do.
Okay, good. I figured one of our listeners would.
And actually, the pages that he's referring to are talking about Mohammed Atta in Hamburg in late '99, travel and. Into
which has been discredited now.
Chechnya, Georgia, all that sort of thing, and Al Qaeda, Bin Laden, Mohammed Atef, I believe it's pronounced.
Yeah.
Nowhere in any of those pages or the surrounding pages does it refer to Iran.
That's very strange. I wonder if. Well, no, the book never came out in hardcover, did it? It was originally printed as a paperback, and so there's not like two editions of it or anything.
Well, that I'm not familiar with, but I am holding the paperback.
Yeah, because sometimes page numbers will change when books go through different editions, but rarely. So, well, fascinating. If maybe somebody can enlighten us what the actual report actually said, because we have now heard the Spinmeister. I mean, the reason why I wanted to get him on this program was because they are doing, just as with William Green yesterday from RightMarch.com, they are doing this huge spam campaign to all the talk show hosts, all the news programs. You're going to be seeing these guys or hearing these guys on the talk, you know, on the Sunday programs, on the Talking Head programs, on the Chris Matthews programs, and certainly on all the right-wing talk show hosts. And somebody needs to be challenging them. Somebody needs to be pointing out that this is a propaganda campaign. The Tom DeLay one yesterday with Bill Green, this one about Iran, and there's more to come. And we need to, somebody has to say, okay, here's what they have to say. Now say what you have to say, and they go, and then, yeah, and, you know, we're really not that easily frightened, thank you very much. We've been through this before. We've seen this movie before. We saw it in the 1930s in Germany. We saw it 2 years ago with George W. Bush. We don't want to see it again. Bill, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
I do appreciate it. It's very kind of you to look that up and give us a shout on that. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number. Mike in Iowa on the line. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Not much. What's happening with you?
I'm fine. Thanks for calling the Tom Hartman program. What's up? What did you want to talk about?
Listen, I don't understand exactly why you mentioned a minute ago that we have this addiction to oil. I agree with you. We do have an addiction to oil, but I don't understand why for the last decade we've been trying to stay away from producing our own oil and getting better things going on. I mean, George Bush right now has an energy policy that's waiting at Congress to be passed. He got $4 billion in there for renewable energy sources to try to eliminate some of that. And then we've also
Of that is for nuclear, you realize.
Well,
non-nuclear portion of that is $500 million.
But Congress is trying to cut it back to like $4 million or four.
No, they're trying to cut back. The Democrats in Congress are trying to cut back on the giveaways to the oil companies and the gas companies and the coal companies and the nuclear industry. The Republicans in Congress, I'm not sure what they're trying to do. It's already been cut from $21 billion giveaway to the big oil and the big coal industries down to $8 billion giveaway to them. I'm not sure why they need these giveaways when they're showing the highest profits in history now. They're exploiting the fact that the price of oil is up to say, therefore, we have to increase the price of gasoline even more.
Yeah, but the problem there is not that we can't get the oil. The problem is that we don't have the refineries for that, and that's why the oil company wasn't the middleman.
And yeah, well, it's yes and no. I've got to go. I'm sorry.
Car insurance.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Hitler, October 6th, 1939, a speech in Berlin. Quote, I can thank God at this moment that he has so wonderfully blessed us in our hard struggle to do what is right against evil. End quote. And for our affiliates and our listeners, by the way, my apologies. I think it's been almost a year since I've done this. But during the last break, I neglected to turn back up the volume control, the what's called a pot here in the business. No, not that kind. for the automation equipment. And so I didn't hear the bumper music, and we missed our break going into our break. And so some of our affiliates might not have gotten a cue, a tone that told them to go into a break. And or some of them may have gone into the break right on top of my words, and it's entirely my fault. That was the I did that. My bad, and just to let you know, and if you happen to be the program director of one of those radio stations, that's what happened. So you know, it's not your equipment. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Should we be going to war with Iran next? Tom in Minnesota on the line. Hey, Tom, what are your thoughts?
Hey, you know, when you were talking to that guy, Jerome,
yeah,
and he mentioned how he condemns, you know, those extremists who hijacked Islam and corrupted a legitimate religion, I was hoping that you would ask him, well, does
what about those extremists who've hijacked Christianity?
Exactly, like Jerry Falwell.
Well, and, or now we've got Bill Frist.
Or him, or remind him how McVeigh and his rapture right crazies were also all about, you know, religion and going to a better place. And
yeah.
It's the same brain, different uniform. And, yeah, I wanted to ask you something real quick. You, on your piece you just wrote, How Rich is Too Rich for Democracy?
Yeah.
And, you know, listening to you is like a seminar all the time on history. And when people often mention Jeffersonian democracy, what does that mean?
Well, it means different things to different people, oddly enough. One of the things I discovered long ago is that to conservatives, it means small government, because Jefferson was in favor of small government. Now, oddly enough, most liberals that I know are not in favor of big government. I mean, we think that, you know, government should do what government should do, but government is us. Government is something that we create. It's something that we need to nurture, and it's something we need to tightly control. Keep a tight leash around the neck of that thing. And frankly, I think historically, true conservatives have agreed with that. I mean, that's simply been the American position, as opposed to the old European position of no, there's kings, and the kings have absolute rights, and the people only have privileges and all that sort of thing.
You know, so when you hear this term, Jeffersonian democracy...
Well, it's been, as I said, prior to the 1930s, it would have been... what you would say today as democratic values,
okay,
or progressive or liberal values, really probably prior to the 1940s or 50s, in fact. And then around, frankly, I'm not sure exactly when, but it had to be around the time of McCarthy, because he would occasionally invoke Jefferson. Around that time, they started selectively pulling out quotes from Jefferson and saying, see,
right,
the guy really thought the government shouldn't be involved in this and shouldn't be. And Jefferson wouldn't have agreed with Social Security, and Jefferson wouldn't have agreed with unemployment
yeah,
insurance, and,
okay,
and, you know, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And so for people on the right, Jeffersonian democracy means their worldview, and for me, it means my worldview. And Jefferson,
okay,
Jefferson, frankly, I think was one of the original liberals. He was clearly one of the Enlightenment thinkers. He
well,
was
that's
clearly,
what Roosevelt claimed Jefferson was the founder.
As did Lincoln.
Exactly.
As did Lincoln, because when the Republican Party was the party of progressive thinking and of reform, that little 20-year window when the Republicans were actually a decent party.
Well, you know, Mario Cuomo wrote a book, What Would Lincoln Do? And the reason he wrote it, he said, was because right after 9/11, all these right-wingers are quoting Lincoln. And, of course, Lincoln was really a liberal in today's terms. So,
absolutely.
So Cuomo did a book, What Would Lincoln Do? To show how liberal Lincoln was.
Yeah, right? I know. In fact, it's been on my list of, you know, one of these days I've got to read this thing. Tom, thanks a lot for the call. I got to
sure,
move along. We got a full line here today. Thanks. Thank you very much. Kodak in Raleigh. Is it North Carolina or South Carolina? I always mix those
North
up.
Carolina.
Okay. Hey, Kodak. Welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
My point was, I think what the guests may have been referring to is that some of the 9/11 participants went through Iran without getting their visas checked. That was
yeah. Yeah, some of the 9/11 participants had traveled through Iran at some point.
My point was, I think what the guests may have been referring to is that some of the 9/11 participants went through Iran without getting their visas checked. That was
yeah. Yeah, some of the 9/11 participants had traveled through Iran at some point.
Right. Way prior to the attacks on 9/11.
Yeah, see, I didn't recall that Iran officially had anything to do with 9/11. Okay. I did recall, however, that some of the hijackers had passed through Iran. So the question then is, you know, what's the significance of that? Well, I guess we're going to have to look at the report. I'm not sure I'm willing to trust the word of the guy who wrote the Swift book. But hopefully somebody will check that book out. Kodak, got to move along. Thanks for the call. Kim in Denver on the line. Hey, Kim.
Hi. I don't know if this is significant as far as preparations for the war in Iran, but yesterday I was driving between northern New Mexico and southern Colorado, where Fort Carson is in Colorado Springs, which is a big base.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a train with like a mile long.
Some folks suggest that World War II got us out of the Great Depression. Well, it helped, but it's a short-term fix. The long-term fix is if you can stimulate a real economy, then people are building things that are going to produce real value. They're building computers, they're building bridges, they're building buildings, they're building things that are going to be used long beyond their initial production. Whereas war material, you drop a bomb, yes, it cost $1 million to make, but boom, it's gone. It's not going to produce any more revenue. So,
yeah, I could sure see the dollars on that train.
Oh, there you go. Kim, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Well said. Jim in Oregon next. Hey, Jim. Jim in Oregon, you are live and on the air and gone. 1-866-889-8894. Michael in Arkansas on the line. Hey, Michael.
Hey, I had 2 points, but I was going to make it a little bit faster and just go with my second point. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay. Rush is... I'm really frustrated with the middle and lower class, more the lower class people that have very little or nothing.
By class, I'm assuming you're talking about economic income.
Yes,
class.
Sir.
Yes,
yes,
income
sir.
Category, yeah.
They align themselves because they've been brainwashed. They're aligning themselves like the person in the ghetto that wears the Z Cabaretti or Guess shirt or whatever,
right,
to look like they're rich. They align themselves by using sympathy for the super rich to make themselves...
it's the Stockholm syndrome. It's the Stockholm syndrome. They're identifying with their oppressors.
Right, right. And it's driving me nuts. I live in Arkansas, and I call into a conservative radio show every day, and I tell them how much of an idiot that they are for doing this. I said, you know, they come in, they say, well, who's rich? I say, if you're making more money off of your money than you could ever imagine by actually working, then you're probably rich. If America considers you in the top 2 percentile, you're probably rich.
Yeah.
I said, get off of it. You probably have never met anybody that I would consider be rich.
Yeah, no, they live in a separate universe. They fly on private jets. They don't fly. People in first class on commercial airplanes are not the rich in America. They have their own jets.
And these people, they think, well, if you tax them, then you're going to tax the small business. I said, look, if you can tax them, the small businesses won't be taxed as highly. And this lady calls in. She says, well... My husband, he's a truck driver, and he makes $100,000 a year, and after taxes, he makes $20,000 a year. I said, first of all, if your husband's making $100,000 a year, I'm not talking about him.
Right. That is not the rich. And if he's only making $20,000 a year after taxes, then she's mixing up her numbers.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure
because she's probably talking about his gross income as a small business is $100,000. And after all is said and done, his net income to himself is $20,000, which really puts him into the category of the lower end of the middle of the working class in America. Michael, I got to move along. Thanks for the call. I do appreciate it. And I appreciate you're out there calling folks and holding them to account. Frank in Connecticut on the line. Hey, Frank, thanks for calling Tom Hartman Program.
Thanks, Tom, for taking my call. First of all, you know, I'm good. I hate labels, but I need to define myself just
sure.
So you know the perspective that I'm coming from. I am, I guess, what is being called these days, and mostly disparagingly, a neoconservative. And, you know, just for reminder to your listeners, you know, we are not a Tom DeLay conservative or Jerry Falwell or anything of that nature. A neoconservative is someone like myself, a lifelong Democrat, never voted Republican in my life until George Bush the second time around. And I consider myself I call myself a 9/12 conservative.
So you agree with the teachings of Leo Strauss?
A 9/12 conservative.
You agree with the teachings of Leo Strauss that the
ends
justify the means, that it's appropriate to lie to the people if it serves a greater good, that you should use religion and fear to cause people to become moral because otherwise they'll be immoral, and that it's entirely appropriate to project force upon the world, even if it causes blowback, because that will help you maintain power.
That's a great deal more complex than that. I will say this, and that is that You know, my favorite definition of a neoconservative is a liberal that was mugged by reality.
Yeah, that's an old cliche, and we've all been mugged by reality. The reality we've been mugged by is George Bush taking a crime and using it to get himself reelected, to steal all our money, to rip us off, to borrow hundreds of billions of dollars, trillions of dollars, several trillion dollars in our names and our children's names, and hand it off to his millionaire and billionaire buddies, and run a war that is making his friends in the defense industry incredibly rich, produce an energy. He said to get himself reelected, to steal all our money, to rip us off, to borrow hundreds of billions of dollars, trillions of dollars, several trillion dollars in our names and our children's names, and hand it off to his millionaire and billionaire buddies, and run a war that is making his friends in the defense industry incredibly rich, produce an energy. He said, if you don't get your soldiers off Saudi soil, and if you don't stop on a war that is making his friends in the defense industry incredibly rich, produce an energy. He said, if you don't get your soldiers off Saudi soil, and if you don't stop supporting the corrupt Saudi family so that the price of oil can go up, and stop exporting oil from Saudi Arabia, I'm going to hit you.
Okay.
Now, why if we had a rational foreign policy in the United States, and if we had a rational energy policy, if we had followed down the course that Jimmy Carter had laid out and said, let's get independent of oil in the Middle East, because that's a nut house over there. We don't want to be involved in it right now. We would not have this problem. But no, George W. Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush, Ronald Reagan, they all came in on oil money, and Bill Clinton, for that matter, with, you know, following along in the same path, and there all this oil money coming in. Yeah, it's no problem. 60% of our blood, of our oil, is imported. That's crazy. That's crazy.
A couple of things. Let's talk recent history. Like last week, the corrupt
Islam, just like in the United States, we had a reality wake-up when Tim McVeigh blew up the McMurrah building, and we realized there are crazies within Christianity in our country. And the entire world had to wake up. And why didn't we deal with the crazies in Islam? And the Muslim countries were willing to do it. In fact, they wanted to do it. Mubarak was begging us not to attack Iraq. He was saying, let us deal with this as a police problem. We will hunt these people down. We will bring them to justice. It will happen. But no, George had to be the big guy. He had to have a war. Karl Rove laid it out. This is what's going to get you reelected if you have a war. So,
thank you. Well, I just want you to keep up the good work, Tom, and I'm going to keep listening to you.
Okay, thanks a lot, Steve. I do appreciate it. And thanks for becoming a reformed conservative.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Good on you. Good on you. 10 minutes before the hour, I'm Tom Hartman.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
So a new man in the White House with a familiar name said he had some fresh ideas, but it's worse now since he came from Texas to Washington. And he wants to fight with many, and he says it's not for oil.
Yes.
National Guard to police the rule.
I think we know a little better now. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Amy in San Diego on the line. Hey, Amy, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. That was a great conversation you had with that neocon. I'm really proud of you. You are so smart.
Well, you mean the caller?
Yes.
Well, thank you. I wish, you know, I could have taken it longer, but it's like I've got 7 calls sitting on hold right now, and I just to. Well, anyhow, you get
the
point.
You were fabulous.
Thank you.
But the reason I called was. I'm sure you've been talking, and I heard you talking about this Justice Sunday that Frisk is organizing with the Family Research Council.
Yeah.
Shouldn't any church that participates in that lose their tax-exempt status?
Well, it's interesting. The ACLU is being investigated by the IRS right now because Julian Bond dared make a speech which the administration says was partisan during the election. Now, the NAACP, excuse me.
Okay.
And the NAACP is taking the position, and they are not backing off from it. The IRS came in and said, we want this document and this document, and the NAACP is saying, no, we're not going to give it to you.
Yeah.
But Jesse Jackson on his radio program last week, which I heard, it was just, you know, by coincidence, which is great. It's being carried on this station here in Portland. He was saying that virtually all of the civil rights organizations in the United States are right now having IRS audits.
Wow.
It's like we're back to Nixon. You know,
this
we're back
so
to the
scary.
Nixon days. It really and truly is. Amy, got to move along. Thanks for the call.
Thanks
for your kind words. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Ken in Warren, Michigan on the line. Hey, Ken, what's up?
Well, I'd like to ask you a question. Is there a blackout on any information from Iraq? I haven't seen nothing in the papers about how many people have been killed over there or shot up or wounded.
Yeah, by and large, there is. I think that the press in the United States has come to the conclusion that, well, everything's going just fine. The surveys, the polls, show that a majority of Americans now, 55%, think that it was a mistake to have gone into Iraq and that we shouldn't stay in there any longer. But the media in America has not figured that out. They haven't caught up with it yet. So I don't think it's an official blackout. Maybe it is. I don't know. What amazes me is that there has been no mention of the one-hour pause in the Iraqi parliament yesterday. This is a huge story in my mind. I'll get back to that in the next hour. Ken, thanks for the call. It's great to hear from you. I do appreciate it. It's Tom Hartman here with you, your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass distraction. Tom Hartman here with you. It must be conservative day. We had Corsi on in the first hour. In the next hour, that's the hour after this hour, we're going to have on another con who's going to be telling us why John Bolton is a good man and the guy that we should send to the United Nations. Just to let you know in advance, just so you can get ready for it. Our quote for the day, and then we're going to take a few of your phone calls here. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, by the way. And if you'd like to drop into our live chat room, go to tomhartman.com and click live chat. It'll get you there. Our quote for the day, it's a little old. It's a 10-year-old quote. But it's a good one. The time has come that the American people know exactly what their representatives are doing here in Washington. Are they feeding at the public trough, taking lobbyist paid vacations, getting wined and dined by special interest groups? Or are they working hard to represent their constituents? The people, the American people, have a right to know. I say the best disinfectant is full disclosure, not isolation. So our quote for the day, our second quote, we had a quote for the day. Our first one was from Hitler. First hour, I guess our second hour quote for the day from Tom DeLay. Boy, it really is conservative day, isn't it? If you're going to talk about cockroaches, if you're going to exterminate cockroaches, you got to go where the cockroaches are, right? As Tom DeLay would say. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Raymond in Cement City, Michigan on the line. Hey, Raymond, welcome to the program.
Hey, good afternoon, Tom. Listen, talking about mass distraction, as you mentioned at the opening of your second hour here, last Sunday on a public radio program called Sound Money, I think it's a PRI kind of program, but they had a little segment on where does your tax dollar go?
Right.
And I guess you wouldn't be surprised to know that they believe 52% of it goes to social spending. Now,
what?
That kind of assumes, well, this is the right
thing. What they're doing, they're always, what they are doing is they are prefacing the word tax dollars with discretion or budget when they talk about the federal budget. They always preface it with the word budget when they talk about the federal budget. They always preface it with the word discretionary.
Well, they didn't.
Or maybe non-discretionary. I don't know.
They didn't preface it. They said, your tax dollar, this is where 52% of it goes. And this is what you get in the literature from these right-wing congressmen and stuff. They're assuming that, just like corporations, that the Social Security and the trust fund for the what do you call it, Medicaid or whatever,
yeah,
that is all rolled into the whole income statement for the corporation, just like, you know, like retirement
right.
funds.
Actually,
are.
Though, so you know, the trust fund for Medicaid no longer exists. It went bankrupt about 7 months ago. Medicaid is now operating in the red.
Okay.
If what George Bush is so hysterical about, excuse me, not Medicaid, Medicare, what George Bush is so hysterical about that will happen to Social Security in 35 or...
To sell this voodoo economics, and it's like only 20% of your dollar goes to national defense and 7% goes to interest on debt, you know, so it really totally warps the picture of what the economic situation of the government operation is.
Yeah, and before I had changed studios, I had a couple of graphics which showed the actual kind of clock, the pie chart, you know, of where your dollars go and where everything is. I don't have that right in front of me right at the moment. Would you, by the way, happen to have that information?
I see if I still have Nick Smith.
No, I'm not interested in his information, but no, the actual numbers. We'll track it down.
Yeah.
We'll track it down.
But I mean, this is the influence that, I mean, this is what's coming out of public radio,
yeah,
and I'm just saying the voodoo economic philosophy.
Yeah, well, the bottom line for me, Raymond, and thank you very much for the call. I do appreciate it. The bottom line for me is, let's say that 52% of our spending is social spending of our tax dollars. In my opinion, if we have people in the United States who are hungry, if we have people in the United States who are literally hungry, food insecurity, we have millions of people in the United States who literally do not know where their next meal is going to come from, millions. If we have people in the United States who are sleeping on the streets, families, then we're not spending enough. Bottom line. And if we have to go to those 7,000 families that make more than $10 million a year and say, sorry, your taxes are going to go back up to what they were under John Kennedy, or they might even go back up to what they were under Eisenhower when we had a good, solid, strong middle class in the United States, fine. And the cons go, oh my God, you're talking about raising income taxes to 70% or 90%? Sure. If that's what it takes. Mike in Washington, D.C., you're on the air, 12 minutes past the hour.
Hey, Tom, how are you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up, Mike?
Okay, I got a couple of quick ones for you. One, have you ever seen the movie Das Schreckliche Mädchen?
No.
Oh, God, you must see it.
The Specific Woman in German.
Schreckliche, Terrible Woman.
Yeah. Actually, it literally translates to something worse than that, but yeah, okay.
It's actually based on a true story of a young girl in Germany, post-war Germany. She's about our age, so, you know, put it in that context.
Right.
And she got an award for an essay she wrote, and so she wanted to write another one about the heroic deeds that were carried out by the people in her town during World War II, because she was always brought up with this idea that, you know, we were all resistors, nobody was a Nazi, this, that, and the other thing.
Right. She was too young to have remembered World War II.
Correct.
Okay.
And so everywhere she went to try and get a look at the town records of the World War II period, she kept on getting thrown off. The books were closed to her. Eventually her house got firebombed a couple of times, because it turned out that all of the leading citizens in town were Nazis.
Right. What a surprise.
During the war.
Right. What a surprise. Well, see, that's the thing. What this speaks to very clearly, Mike, is the tribal instinct in human beings. And this is a very real thing. We all have this instinct to say, this is my family, this is my tribe, this is my community. Right or wrong, this is the group that I identify with. These are my people. Right or wrong. And so when nations go to war, and when people feel like they're under attack, many people, in most cases, the majority of the people, will coalesce around a leader, will come together around an idea or an ideal or a mission or whatever, because, hey, it's my country. And my country, right or wrong, there is a reality to that grounded in simple human nature that has to do with the fact that humans have been organized probably all the way back. You can organize it. I mean, you look at mammals all the way back to prairie dogs. You know, for millions of years of evolution, humans and prehumans have been organized along the lines of community and family. And
right.
So we apply that to nation. We tend to think of nation as simply our larger community. So it doesn't surprise me, frankly, and I lived in Germany for a year, and I know a lot of those old Nazis, and I know some of them who still think to this day the only thing Hitler did wrong was he invaded Russia a year too early. And I know a lot of them who are very repentant and very horrified by what happened, and yet they were still part of it. And, I can tell you from having talked to these folks how easy it is to get swept up into that. And I'm seeing that, well, for example, with the caller we had in the last hour who was calling up, and he was like gung-ho. He just voted for Bush for the first time in his life. And that's that brainwashing that happens that Goebbels was talking about. If you can reduce things to black and white, you can reduce it to a simple slogan, and you repeat it often enough, people will believe it whether it's true or not. Particularly
right.
If it has to do with, look out, we're in danger, be afraid.
And that's the second part I wanted to bring up. He was emphasizing the fact that the worst thing in the world, the most dangerous thing, is Islamofascism. And yet he doesn't seem to see that what we're doing here is we want to do exactly the same thing. But instead of Sharia law, we want to impose somebody's idea of biblical law.
Yeah, we have dueling extremist fundamentalists. And then you've got Bush coming along with these incredible Orwellian statements like, for example,
that when we talk about war, we're really talking about peace.
Get it. Here it is again.
That when we talk about war, we're really talking about peace.
That's literally right out of 1984 by George Orwell. Sometimes I think Karl Rove read the book and he said, here's a script. We can use this. Look at this here on page 12. I've highlighted this. Page 136, page 100, page 217. And he went through 1984 and he marked it all up with a highlighter and he gave it to George W. And he says, you say this and you say this and you say this and we're going to do this. And this is how we're going to conquer America.
Yep.
Yeah.
It worked.
Well, so far.
Worked last time.
Now, here's the problem. Berlusconi has seen this, because Berlusconi tried doing the same thing, and Tony Blair tried doing the same thing. And the problem is that eventually people see through it. Eventually the German people saw through Hitler. By the end of World War II, even before the war was over, the German people had figured out, this guy's nuts, he led us down the wrong road. We are figuring out that Bush has led us down the wrong road. The Italian people are figuring out that Berlusconi led them down the wrong road. As fascists rise up, as ideologues, as extremists who use war and fear as their way of trying to control people rise up, eventually the people wake up and say, enough of this stuff. We've had it. We're not going to take it anymore. So, Mike, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. I've got to move along. Judy in Michigan on the line. Hey, Judy, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
You've got a lot of calls from Michigan today.
Yeah, well, we got a lot of calls from all over. The next one's from California. So.
Oh, really? Well, we'll go out west then.
what's up?
Go west, young man. Go west.
Well, I did. I'm actually broadcasting from Portland, Oregon today. So.
I wish I were out there.
I'll be back, by the way, in June. I'm going to be broadcasting from WTKG in Grand Rapids. So.
Oh, yeah, I'm trying to move up there.
Yeah, it's pretty country. So anyhow, what's up?
But anyway, when you first come on the air, that person, I don't scare easy. All these terrorist things, all it is scares anymore and threat, you know. And it doesn't scare me, but I heard, I think it was on C-SPAN, that Bush has signed a bill, so any of us, I'm on Social Security, any of us poor or low income cannot file for bankruptcy.
Yes, this he signed it yesterday.
Yeah,
it's not totally that you cannot file for bankruptcy. What it is that they've stripped away many of the protections that middle class, working people, and poor people had in the United States under bankruptcy provisions.
Well, that's going to hurt us because I live in low income housing, and that's going to hurt us even trying to get into that.
It will if you ever need the protection of bankruptcy. However, what they did make sure to preserve, and I'm sure this will really please you, Judy. There's this thing called asset protection trusts. If you're a multimillionaire, and there's also Chapter 11, which Donald Trump uses. is in bankruptcy right now with his casino in Las Vegas. They preserved asset protection trusts.
Do away with Amtrak too. I heard that.
Yeah,
today
no, that's
too.
That. Yeah, that's a whole other thing. But they took care of the millionaires and they took care of the billionaires and they screwed the middle class. And Bush signed the bill yesterday. 20 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, I've heard that other countries are down on the U.S., a land of mass consumption, our lives filled with excess. But my daddy wasn't fighting on Normandy that day for the right to drive a Hyundai. I refuse to live that way.
Oh, no, I gotta have my Hummer.
And I'm proud to be an American who gets just 5 mpg. Though I live alone, the car I own can seat 103. And I'll gladly park so close to you, when you pull out, you can't see. No, I'll never trade my Escalade. God bless my SUV.
There you go. Welcome back, my friends. The Tom Hartman Radio Program. 25 minutes past the hour, 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. The folks in the chat room just introduced me to a great website here. If you can just, it's at nationalpriorities.org, and you can plug in a dollar number of your taxes, and it breaks out how it was spent. Shows how it was spent. If you've paid, for example, $100 in taxes. $100 in taxes. Then roughly $30 went to the military. Roughly $18.60 went to pay interest on the national debt that was mostly run up by Ronald Reagan and George W. Bush. $20.27 goes to health care, 20.3%. $6.58, about 7%, goes to income security. That would be Social Security and various other programs. $3.67 goes to education. $3.44 goes to veterans benefits. $2.69 goes to nutrition spending. $2.14 to housing. $1.72 to environmental protection. $0.94 to job training. And $10.51 to everything else, to basically run the government. Jamila in Eureka, California, on the line with us. Hey, Jamila.
Good morning, Tom. Since today is the day of quotes, I have one for you, too.
Okay.
And it goes like that. The biggest enemy of every country is not behind the border, but the one within.
And that quote is from?
Comrade Stalin.
Comrade Stalin. And, of course, Stalin was convinced that he had enemies everywhere. He was absolutely one of the most paranoid. One of the most paranoid leaders in history. He had hundreds of people murdered in his purges. And he was running around saying the same kinds of things that Tom DeLay is saying about, you know, wow, we got to. Did you see Tom DeLay at the NRA, Jermilla?
Yeah, I did.
I mean, here he is holding this rifle up and saying to everyone, it's good to have a few of your friends around, especially if they're armed, in the context of talking about judges. When judges are being murdered in the United States, and now you got Bill Frist jumping on this bandwagon, you've got Cornyn going from California saying, essentially, gee, what do you expect if you're going to rule that way? People are going to kill you. It's like the right wing in this country is sanctioning war on we the people, on the government of, by, and for the United States, on we the people. I think it's just wrong. It's just absolutely wrong. Jermilla, thanks a lot for the call. It's great to hear from you. Tom in Michigan, we've only got about a minute left, Tom. What's up?
Hi, Tom. Did you see Ted the Stooge Nugent at the NRA?
No, I didn't.
You know, he's ranting and raving about wanting to kill everybody, but he didn't mention the extremists like Timothy McVeigh or the neo-Nazis or anybody like that.
No, they never do. They're perfectly willing to talk about extremists in Islam, but not extremists in Christianity.
Well, and then he also said, remember the Alamo, and what's he mean by that? I don't think he was even in this country when that took place.
Yeah, and the Alamo is a rather checkered story. I mean, you can spin that story a number of different ways.
Exactly.
But it's a nice slogan for people who grew up when Davy Crockett was on TV in the 50s, you know?
Well, I think he still lives in that era. But also, Frank, that neoconservative called in.
Yeah.
He's talking about his grandfather. How come he doesn't say he was over in the military? Or why doesn't he, if he really believes what he's talking
well,
about?
Well, if you're a neoconservative, you don't join the military.
Oh, you
Wolfowitz never. That's right. You it's part of the. That's right. It's part of the for the greater good. You lie to people, you know, for the greater good. You all that sort of thing for the greater good. You none of these guys. Wolfowitz, Feith, Rum. You know, not, go on down the list.
Chickenhawks.
Yeah, Chickenhawks, by and large, almost all of them. Well
good
said.
Day, Tom.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Tom. Good to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio. 29 minutes past the hour.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Sweet Pie Rules.
Looked me over and I guess you thought I was all right.
And welcome back.
All right in the sort of a limited way.
Sort of a limited way.
Said,
oh, must be a neocon.
Party. I said, who am I to blow against the wind?
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, 27 minutes before the hour. Coming up on 26 minutes before the hour. Quick phone call here from Logan in New York City. Hey, Logan, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. I just was wanting to talk to you about a little bit like the Republican strategy of sort of dividing us. And, you know, what that sort of dynamic of the DLC is. I mean, are they really as bad as the Republicans? And shouldn't we have a Big Tent as well and have them in it?
Well, if the Big Tent, I mean, it's like if the Big Tent includes people who are pathological or institutions that are pathological, institutions that are destructive to democracy, no, I don't think we should have a Big Tent. Call me an extremist if you want. I don't think so. I really don't think that the DLC should be playing a role in Democratic politics. I think the Democratic Party needs to purge itself of the DLC and DLC Democrats, in my opinion, if it wants to survive. The DLC has brought the Democratic Party nothing but ruin, with the single exception of Bill Clinton. And he won, in my opinion, not because of the DLC, but because he's a brilliant and charismatic politician.
But, I mean,
which doesn't mean I agree with all his policies, but just his personality.
But, I mean, in terms of the lesser of two evils, you're saying the DLC can't even win, so why?
I'm not willing to settle for the lesser of two evils, Logan. I think that we absolutely must say we want the best. We want the best. Why not the best for America? Why not go back to the values of Roosevelt? Why not say this is where we stand and we're not moving? We're gonna take this seriously. So that's what I think we have to do. Logan, I got to move along. We have a guest here that I want to share with you. March Wentworth is with us. March is the Senior Associate World Resource, is the Legislative Representative for Clean Energy at the Union of Concerned Scientists, works at the nexus of renewable energy activity between House and Senate staffers on the energy bill. Hey, March.
Hey, Tom.
Glad to have you on. The House, was it the House last night voted? I don't have it right here in front of me.
They're really close. They're about three amendments away from banging this thing through.
It was last night, though, that they voted on drilling in the Alaska Wildlife Refuge.
Yeah, they stuck drilling in there, and they killed a lot of oil savings amendments, and it's business as usual out there.
Yeah, so give us an update.
Well, basically, we're disappointed in the House bill, Tom. It does nothing. Even the president admitted yesterday that it doesn't do anything for gasoline prices. We were shocked. But it does nothing for natural gas prices. These are prices that have doubled in the last 2 years. Even the petrochemical industry is leaving the country. Fertilizer is up, I'd say twice what it was last year, which means
next year you can see food prices up 20-30% at least.
Yeah, I mean, spring planting and farmers going through a lot of changes there. And from my point of view, it really does very little for renewable energy. And the reason why that's important is that this isn't a toy or a plaything anymore. It's wind is competitive with natural gas right now.
Right
we
now,
can
March.
Turn this stuff right now.
March, we had a caller into the program earlier who may have been some Republican trying to spout talking points, or may have been, you know, and just crank calling talk shows, or it might have been actually somebody who read the talking points in the newspaper and believed them, who said that there's billions of dollars in this program for non-oil energy sources. And my response was, you're talking about nuclear and you don't realize it. You think it's renewable. Nuclear has a big chunk of this energy bill, do they not?
Well, yeah, you know, my colleagues have analyzed all the tax breaks in this bill, and 95% of them go to fossil fuel, coal, nukes, gas, all that crowd. What your caller might have been referring to is the ethanol program. Yes, there's a big chunk in there for ethanol, but we got to use everything. We got to use wind and solar and biomass and ethanol.
Well, not only that, the last time I looked, it takes about a gallon and a half of gasoline to make a gallon of ethanol when you consider the cost of planting and harvesting crops and processing and everything else. Ethanol still has to be subsidized, does it not, or am I missing something?
Well, that's because you're not a corn grower, Tom. Now, if you were getting corn subsidies, no, seriously.
But that's the point, isn't it? I mean, we've got these huge, massive corn subsidies. This is one of the reasons why there's corn syrup in all our drinks. It's why Coke changed their formula, because they wanted to go from cane syrup to corn syrup, because it was cheaper, because it's being subsidized with our tax dollars.
Well, ethanol's probably got a piece to play in it, but what we'd like to do is level the playing field a little bit and you know, either reduce the subsidies that you're handing out to the coal, gas, and nuke guys, or, you know, get some of those subsidies for the nuclear, for the renewables crowd.
Yeah. In terms of crops that can be grown for food, my understanding, I've seen this in dozens of different places, is that if you were to use hemp rather than corn, it would actually be efficient, because it's a much more efficient accumulator of sunlight and converter of sunlight into fuel, into cellulose, than is corn.
No, but that's true. There's a lot of people out there who know how to grow corn, but you know, stuff like switchgrass or sugar cane, or you know, there's a whole variety of biomass products that we could go to make ethanol
that are more efficient than corn.
That are more efficient than corn.
Yeah, because with corn you're actually just using a little bit of the plant. You're using the corn kernels, and the corn plants are planted far apart from each other and all that sort of thing. So,
yep.
So you're with the Union of Concerned Scientists.
Right.
Now, years and years ago, I'm talking 25, 30 years ago, John Goffman and I corresponded at some length. I was working on a book on energy. Did he not start your group?
He was one of the movers and shakers, yeah. I mean, we had our origin in nuclear power issues, and we still weigh in. We have one of the few nuclear power engineers on staff for an environmental group, and
right.
This is the guy who's actually been inside and can tell you when they work and when they don't.
So what's the influence of lobbyists in Washington in all this?
Well, it's easy to say everyone, you know, the big guys buy their way in, but the fact is that they get time. It's access.
Sure.
And,
well, it's like Westar said in their memo about $56,000 to Tom DeLay. This will get us a seat at the table.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we're all, you know, it's an even playing field here, but except that, you know, if I get 35 seconds with a member of Congress, that makes a difference. I can make my 3 points just as well as the next guy. But, you know, they get their 30 seconds, 2 hours, the golf game, whatever it is,
yeah,
with the big guy.
And, well, in fact, I'm just realizing now, your title is Legislative Representative for Clean Energy for the Union of Concerned. You're actually a lobbyist.
It's true.
It's true.
I'm one of those inside the beltway.
So how do you lobby for something where you're not, I mean, do you go into these guys' offices and say, hey, if you'll vote for clean energy, I'll give you $100,000. I'll take you on a trip to Ireland and we'll go golfing in Scotland?
No, there's one of the things that you do as a lobbyist is you present the news fairly, and you never, surprisingly enough, you never lie, because if you get caught, you're done.
and...
Now, is this, are you speaking for yourself, or are you speaking for all lobbyists, March?
Well, most lobbyists, you know, play it there. They may leave out the truth, but they never lie.
So then when...
Because if you're caught, you're head.
So when these senators and Congress, members of Congress who voted on, for example, the bankruptcy bill, March...
Yeah.
When they voted on the bankruptcy bill, they actually knew... That it was a job that would basically screw the American average American, the American middle class, and would help only the most rich among us and the corporations. They knew
well,
that.
Well, what any lobbyist tries to do is they come in and they say, here's how this helps the folks back home, however you want to define that, whether it's the bankers back home or, you know, the guy who's, you know, borrowed, you know, $5,000 to buy a car and has gotten behind in payments. So the question is sort of who back home is being represented by a lobbyist. And then the lobbyist says, you know, this is how it benefits you, you know, with your constituents. This is how it benefits you with your politics, and this is what the elected officials back home are saying. So you convey that you're the synopsis.
Weren't the credit card companies? I mean, they're passing out millions. Their donations, the donations of the financial services industry to the, particularly to the Republican Party before the 2004 election, was absolutely massive.
No, it was a lot. But I mean, you look in terms of the renewable energy field. You know, we've got wind sprouting up in farm communities all over the country, and you know, we have a story to tell. This is good for farmers. It creates jobs. It saves consumers money, and I swear that, you know, in the long run, that message is going to get through.
But how can you fight the oil money?
Well,
these guys have billions, and they're using it.
They are using it, and they're using it for a lot of ads, but. There is a great truth. It's the one thin truth that I hang on to in this business, and that is, so far, Tom, corporations do not vote. People vote.
But corporations are claiming a whole series of other human rights. They're claiming the right to speak, the First Amendment rights. If you go back and look at Boston versus Bilotti, the Supreme Court case, where the First National Bank of Boston asserted the right to political speech.
Yeah, that's true.
And prior to that, we said, hey, corporations can't vote, therefore, what are they doing in politics? Now we're saying corporations can't vote, but they can influence politics. What's wrong with this picture, March?
They do. Well, there's a lot wrong. There's some people who argue that these are not persons under the 14th Amendment. They don't behave like persons.
Yeah, I'm one of those persons who argues that and argues it strongly. I wrote a book about it called Unequal Protection.
That's what I hear.
Yeah, so in any case, what can our listeners do? What can folks on the ground do?
Well, one of the things, you know, because of that truth that corporations don't vote, the fact is that it's people have to get more organized than ever to send a message, to be able to say that, you know, no, this isn't working. It might take a while, and I'm not saying it's easy, but I'm saying that... you know, phenomenal things have happened. Nothing is forever here. You know.
Is this another way of saying, March, that if enough people actually get mobilized and do something and speak out, that if enough of our listeners, for example, were to pick up the phone and dial 1-877-SOB-USOB, which is the toll-free phone number for Capitol Hill, and ask to talk to their member of Congress, their senator or their representative, and tell them, please do not pass an energy bill that is a giveaway to the oil industry. Instead, put together an energy bill that will actually produce renewables and that will wean us away from dependence on foreign oil so we don't have to fight any more wars in the Middle East, please, thank you very much, you know, to defend our oil supply. If they did that, that might produce a result?
It might produce a result. I mean, this is a very human institution, and what happens is, you know, some of these members... go back to the leadership and the Tom to the Lays of the world and say, Tom, I'd love to be with you with this, but the guys back home are going to kill me on this.
Yeah. So it's
the one thing he cannot argue with.
Yeah, so it's absolutely imperative, then, that our listeners call 1-877-SOB-USOB, which is the official toll-free phone number for Capitol Hill, for Congress and the House of Representatives and the Senate. I know it sounds funny, March. It actually, it's the old Senate Office Building number, and
yeah.
That's what SOB stands for. But yeah. Nonetheless, that's the it's Senate Office Building, United States of America, Senate Office Building, right? 1-877-SOB-USOB. And if people will call that number and ask to speak with their member of Congress or their Senate, one of their senators, and say, well, it's before the House now, right?
Well, it's just finishing up in the House, and then soon it'll be in the Senate.
Yeah.
So
you can call all of the above.
You could call all of the above, sure.
Okay. March Wentworth, thank you so much for being with us. Legislative representative for Clean Energy, the Union of Concerned Scientists. Well done. Keep up the good work, March.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thanks for being on. And what you have to do, my friends, is...
You've got to say, I'm a human being. My life has value.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell... I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
And I'm going to call 1-877-SOB-USOB and talk to my member of Congress and say, listen to what March Wentworth had to say. Listen to what the renewable industry has to say. We have this technology now. We can do this. We can make this work. We can make it happen. Let's get involved in this. And let's not do some of these absurd, obscene, deep, things that this administration seems so committed to. Deep in the energy bill that was approved by a House committee this week under a section titled Miscellaneous is a brief provision that could have major consequences for communities struggling to clean up their dirty air. This is in the energy bill. It basically says that a community can postpone cleaning up their air until the community upwind of them has cleaned up their air. So New York doesn't have to clean up its air until Ohio does, or cities in New York don't until those in Ohio. And those in Ohio don't have to clean up their air until communities in Iowa have. And the ones in Iowa don't have to clean up their air until the ones in California have. And California could probably make the argument that it doesn't have to clean up its air until China does, because you have measurable levels of pollution. In fact, it's rather startling. Some estimates indicate that perhaps as much as 30 or 40% of all the mercury raining down on the United States is actually coming now from China and India. They are so industrialized. So this is buried in the energy bill. Yes, you don't have to worry. You can just take your time, put it off another 10 or 15 years, and in the meantime, the environment gets warmer, the air gets dirtier. And it goes around and around the world, just around and around and around. The world keeps spinning, the air keeps getting dirtier. We've got to do something about this. Call your member of Congress now. It's Tom Hartman, 10 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Oh, it's Tom Rush.
I don't want millions, mister. I don't want your diamond ring. All I want is the right to live, mister. Won't you give me back my job again?
No, we've got to fight this war in Iraq. If you want to know what's really going on, why we really went to war in Iraq, and why they're ginning up a war in Iran, all you have to do is listen to Dick Cheney and George W. Bush.
Iraq sits on top of 10% of the world's oil reserves. Very significant reserves, second only to Saudi Arabia.
And George W. Bush, when his declaration of war, he's speaking to the Iraqi people, and he said, and now I have a message for the people of Iraq. Right? This is when I was half expecting him to say, please don't shoot our soldiers. They're just kids like yours. You know, our GIs are just like your GIs. We can all live in peace. Just surrender, and we'll bring democracy to your nation. I was expecting some noble thing. And instead, George W. says,
your fate will depend on your actions. Do not destroy oil wells.
Yeah, do not destroy oil wells. What? Well, I guess now we know. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Jeff in Arizona on the line. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the program.
That was an amazing tape. I hadn't heard that before. That was
from his speech on TV.
Oh, dear God.
On his speech on TV when he said, we are giving 2 hours' notice, and the first 15 minutes or 5 minutes of it or
Do
so was to us. And then he said, and now I have a message to the people of Iraq. I would like to speak directly to the people of Iraq. And I'm thinking, okay, here comes something like, as I said, our people are peaceful, loving people, and we want to bring democracy. We're just trying to overthrow the dictator. Please rise up against Saddam. Join our forces. Something like that, right? I was expecting that. I was thinking, even if he doesn't think this way, he's got rational speechwriters. And instead, what do we get? We get this.
Your fate will depend on your actions. Do not destroy oil wells.
And that's George W. And now you know why we're at war in Iraq. And the Iraqi people got it in that moment. And people wonder, why is there an insurgency? Why is there an insurgency?
Oh, my God.
They're all looking around going, where's our oil going?
I've got to find that in a bit. In a MP3,
you can find it on
like
whitehouse.gov. It's in his speech. It's on the White House website.
I've got a copy of that.
It's pretty incredible. Jeff, we're out of time. You got maybe 10, 15 seconds if there was a comment you wanted to make.
Solar power, the prices are coming down. I'm building a new house, and I'm finding that it costs $7,000 per kilowatt to do. It normally takes about 2.5 kilowatts per...
7,000 a kilowatt. That means if you amortize it over seven cents a kilowatt. Okay.
Okay, 7 cents a kilowatt to build, write it off, include it in your construction loan. Get to write the interest off on your taxes.
That's great.
Great deal.
Yeah, my understanding is you can amortize solar now over about a 10-year period, and it's profitable. Yeah. It's actually
also biodiesel with a tax rebate is cheaper now.
That's great. Jeff, we're out of time. Got to wrap it up. Wait, next hour, a conservative coming on. Stick around. Tom Hartman with you.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. 7 minutes past the hour. John Bolton. John Bolton, the man of the hour, the man of the day. Time will tell what happens with him. We have now George Voinovich had what he called an attack of conscience. Republican senator from Ohio. His conscience got the better of him. If you saw the hearings, Richard Lugar was going, well, let's take a vote on this guy. And then Voinovich says, we're going to take a vote on him, I'm going to vote no. And all of a sudden Lugar's like, no, we're not going to take a vote. Now Kerry is saying, well, let's take a vote on this guy. The Republicans are starting to jump ship. 6 years ago, March 24th, 1999, John Bolton said that he really didn't think that the United States should have done anything to stop the Serbs from their ethnic cleansing, from their slaughter of the Kosovo Albanians. Nah, you shouldn't do that. In fact, Bill O'Reilly had him on and said, let's say you and I are walking down the street in Washington, D.C., and across the road we see a gang beating up a woman and hurting a woman. This is the Samaritan story, right? Only, of course, in Jesus' story of the Samaritan had already been beaten up when the priest decided to walk on the other side of the street. But anyhow, O'Reilly says, we didn't know that woman at all, and it wasn't in our interest personally to stop the beating, but I think you and I would cross the street, don't you, but Mr. Bolton? Bolton, well, maybe, or we might call the police, or we might do something else. O'Reilly says, I'll tell you what, I would cross the street right there. Bolton says, well, good for you. This is the man that we want as our representative to the United Nations? Well, Dr. O'Neill Dozier thinks so. Dr. O'Neill Dozier is a spokesman for RightMarch.com. He's an attorney, an ordained minister, a former professional football player for the Chicago Bears. And I see that for years, Dr. Dozier, or Reverend Dozier, you were a professor of law at Broward Community College. You worked with It says Governor Bush here repeatedly throughout your bio. Is that the Governor Jeb Bush or Governor George W. Bush?
Jeb Bush.
Governor Jeb Bush.
Governor Jeb Bush.
Okay. And that you've been invited to the White House to pray with President Bush. Mm-hmm. That would be the Governor George Bush, now the president.
Mm-hmm.
And a patriotic American, you served two consecutive terms in the U.S. military. I salute you for your service, sir, and thank you for that. Why, as a former member of the American military and as a Christian, how can you even tolerate this man?
Well, because people change, Tom. People change. You see, people no longer believe the things that they used to believe.
Has John Bolton made any statement of contrition? Has he made any confession of wrongdoing?
I really don't know. I don't know whether or not I believe that the...
Well, if you don't know if he's made those... I mean, if you're using the basis of Christianity, the idea that if you admit your sins and you repent, literally repent, which means that you turn away from them. I mean, it comes from the word in the what is it, the Greek or the Latin, whatever, that to turn away from, that you will not do that anymore. There is a very clear sort of process in Christianity about that. And it sounds to me like you're saying you think that John Bolton has gone through that process with regard to his being a kiss-up, kick-down guy, his regard to his being a serial bully, with regard to his saying ethnic cleansing is just fine with me. No, I wouldn't cross the street to help that Samaritan, that awful Samaritan. And yet, you have no evidence of that?
Well, here, what you have here, Tom, is you do have that the president is standing by John Bolton. Evidently, the president has some evidence that John is the right man for the job.
What if President George Bush is not the moral, upstanding man you think he is, but he's just a very skilled manipulator, and he's manipulated you as well?
No, I don't think that. No, I don't think that at all. I think that this president is an outstanding man. This president is truly a born-again Christian.
So you're supporting John Bolton because George Bush says it's okay?
If John Bush, I mean, listen, if John has done nothing that would cause Bush to turn against him, and evidently he has not, then I'm going to support him. I'm going to support him because our president is supporting him.
Well, O'Neill, I have to say, at one level, you know, as person to person, I honor your loyalty to a person that you respect and apparently is a friend of yours. On the other hand, as an American citizen, as a person whose life is going to be influenced by who is representing us at the United Nations, and you're one of those too. You also are an American citizen. And as a father with children and hopefully someday grandchildren, who will live in this country, who will have to deal with the consequences of this man's behavior at the United Nations. I am very concerned that if he behaves at the UN the way he's behaved in his previous jobs, we're going to be in trouble.
But Tom, now let's talk about his behavior.
Okay.
How many people are saying that the man has a bad behavior?
Yeah.
The Melody girl came forth. Yes, she's talking about it. But this girl is biased. This girl has a motive to lie. This girl never wanted Bush to be reelected.
Well, let's quote her. She's making a written statement to the Senate. This is a crime if it's a lie, so that, you know, they could prosecute her for this.
Her statement, John, all by herself.
She says, "Well, no, now we have at least one senator who has said that there is apparently independent, three different sources of independent corroboration to the truth of this."
Then bring those persons forward. They've
postponed these hearings. But here she says, and I quote, and I'd just like to get your take on this. She had complained about the fact that this corporation was ripping off you and me, we the people, that this corporation is ripping us off. And the corporation hires Bolton as its pit bull, as its lawyer. And then she says, and I quote, "Mr. Bolton proceeded to chase me through the halls of a Russian hotel, throwing things at me, shoving threatening letters under my door, and generally behaving like a madman for nearly 2 weeks while I awaited fresh direction from my company and from USAID. John Bolton hounded me in such an appalling way that I eventually retreated to my hotel room and stayed there. Mr. Bolton, of course, then routinely visited me there to pound on the door and shout threats."
But this is what she's saying, Tom.
But she's not the only one.
Saying.
She's not the only one. I mean, a member of Chuck Hagel's staff has been harassed by this man. You've got people from the CIA. You have
how? When you have people, let me tell you something, Tom, listen, Tom.
Yes, I'm listening.
I am a pastor. I'm a pastor of a church, right? Now you know, in that type of environment, you know, you always have to, you know, you have to operate in a lovingly way. But listen, Tom, there are times that I have to get people who work around the church straight.
I agree with you, O'Neill, and I'm saying
sometimes they don't like it, and they walk away, and they talk about the church, and they talk about me. That don't.
But O'Neill, if you have somebody in your church who is a mugger or a rapist or you know, they just steal $5 from the plate as it's being passed around, and you confront them about that, that doesn't affect the future of the United States.
No, but here's the thing here, though. You know, you talk about people being in charge of people. Certainly, you're not going to ever be a supervisor and never have a run-in with a person. Come on, Tom.
If these statements are true, if it is true that what the CIA analysts are saying, what Senator Hagel's staff said, what Melanie Dozier is saying, what all these people coming forward are saying, that this guy really has a very brutal personality, what he apparently exhibited on
brutal,
the O'Reilly Factor.
We have a lot of people who have come forth and said he has a nice personality.
Okay, if these...
You see what I'm trying to say?
Well, I'm sure he knows how to be nice to people.
Don't we play on that?
Well,
why don't we say, well, gee, all these beautiful people have come forth, and they say he has a beautiful personality. Why are we just laboring on two or three incidents of two or three people who have a reason to lie? People who are biased in the first place. People who do not like George Bush.
You know, at Ted Bundy's...
And people who do not like the war that we're in Iraq, and they would certainly oppose Bush.
But no, Bush is going to have a nominee, and there are going to be people who are going to vote for it. George Bush is president, and he's going to be president for another three years, more or less, unless he gets impeached. And during that time, he's going to have a nominee. So I don't think that anybody can rationally say that Democrats and now Republicans like Voinovich are opposing this nomination simply because it's George Bush's. That doesn't make any sense, because George Bush is simply going to have to nominate somebody else, and that's going to be George Bush's. And nobody is crazy enough in our government, even the most partisan hack, to say that we should go 3 years without a representative to the United Nations. Come on, you don't really believe that.
But this man qualifies. We need a man like him, a tough man like him. We need a man that's going to go there with a strong arm and speak for the United States. We need someone there.
O'Neill, just a minute ago, you said that this guy can get all kinds of good people to speak for him. At Ted Bundy's sentencing, he had character witnesses come forward and say, no, he's really a nice guy. Just because somebody has friends and has been nice to people.
You're comparing a man with Ted Bundy, Tom. Come on.
I am comparing a man who sanctioned the murder of hundreds of thousands of people, O'Neill. He sanctioned the murder. He said he would do nothing to stop the murder of hundreds of thousands of people. And you want to put him in the United Nations?
20 years ago? Let's look back in everybody's past 20 years ago.
I have not heard him repent.
What would you do 20 years ago, Tom?
I have not heard him repent.
Okay.
I am not, and I am not the one who's being nominated for the United Nations. And
evidently, he has done the same, because he supports Bush and Iraq. Do you see what I'm trying to say? Every one of us, and everyone who's listening out there, Tom, 20 years ago, they can think back in their life, and there are things that they used to believe that they no longer believe.
So you really okay? So
people change.
So we got
people
it.
People change. I have changed. People change.
I'll give you that, O'Neill.
People don't say the same stupid things they used to say.
O'Neill, we're going around in circles on this, and so
okay.
I'll give you that. People do change. I don't think Bolton has changed.
Change.
You think he has? We have a difference of opinion on this. I'm wondering if all the money and all of the support, the millions of dollars that have been given to the Bush family, primarily to Bush Sr. and also to Bush Jr. by the Reverend Sung Myung Moon and the Washington Times, which Reverend Moon owns, the $300,000 that Reverend Moon loaned to Jerry Falwell, bothers you when Reverend Moon goes into the Senate office building and a member of Congress brings a crown to him, puts it on his head, and then Moon proceeds to say that he now is the new Messiah, that he has come to finish the job that Jesus started and failed at. Does that trouble you?
Well, that would trouble me if it was done outside of humor.
I am not exaggerating this. You don't know about this?
No, I don't know anything about that.
This was reported in the Washington Post, in the New York Times, in the Washington Times itself. They bragged about it. It was in the Senate office building.
Sure
Senator John Warner rented the room.
I'm sure it was a humorous thing.
It was not. It was not.
Listen, can I just say, let me just tell you this, Tom. Tom, I have been to the White House. I have sat down with this president. I sat down with him for 10 minutes. Talk with the man. The man is the most humble. The man is very, very humble.
He was able to convince you. Okay, O'Neill, thank...
The man doesn't exalt himself.
Okay, O'Neill, we're out of time. I'm sorry. You've made your point, and I think you made it very eloquently, and I thank you so much for coming on the program to make it. You honor George Bush and John Bolton by proxy, and good on you. Thank you. 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
He's a cowboy president, but he wears a black hat. In America, can't get away with that.
And he apparently is very charming and persuasive in person. This is something that I've been saying from day one. People say, George W. Bush, he's really dumb. And I'm like, no, he's not. He has an exceptional level of what might be referred to as emotional intelligence in some areas. In some areas. Keep in mind, whether or not he's a sociopath, sociopaths can be are very charming, almost always. And so there you heard it from the lips of somebody who actually spent time with George W. Bush. We have a few callers. We'll get to our calls right after this. First, I want to bring in Victoria Jones from the Talk Radio News Service with our report from Washington, D.C. for the day. Hey, Victoria.
Hey. Well, I would have to agree he is very charming in person, one-on-one.
You've met him.
I have. I mean, only at a social function like the White House Christmas party, you know, but I thought, well, I'll say something sort of funny to him and see how he responds. And, you know, he came right back with a little quip and a laugh and something else. Oh, yes, he did.
Interesting.
He was very charming. One-on-one.
Yeah, they said the same thing about Ted Bundy.
I'm sure they did.
No, I'm serious. They did. That was one of the things. He was working a suicide hotline. He was volunteering. He was, we need not go on.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't get all those girls to get into your car, you know. I mean, you can't do that unless you've got some charm.
Right. And you can't get a country to go into Iraq unless you've got some charm. And you can't get this minister. We just had a guest on, a minister, a pastor of a church, who is doing the circuit, all the right-wing talk shows right now. And, of course, we're on their email list, so I said, sure, I'll put him on the air. And he's talking about how John Bolton is a wonderful guy. And I said, why? And he said, because George Bush supports him. And George Bush is a good Christian, and if he supports him, that's enough for me.
That was the argument?
That was the argument. I'm not kidding. That was the argument. And I said, well, you know, he says he, you know, there's all these people saying that he's behaved this way. And the guy says, well, you know, I'm assuming that he's repented because George Bush wouldn't support him if he was really like that. And I'm like, well, what if George Bush is really like that? What if these guys are two peas in a pod and you've just been fooled? And he's like, no, he didn't fool me. I was in the White House for 10 minutes.
Oh, well, that's enough then, isn't it?
Yeah, apparently.
Oh, I mean, Bush did it. He looked into Putin's soul.
Yeah, well, that's right. Snap judgments seem to run in the party or something.
Yeah, very effective.
Yeah, anyhow, so your report for the day from Washington, D.C.
Yes, indeed. I was at the White House briefing a little bit earlier. The president's talking about his energy plan, which he very much wants to have passed. Also, of course, was asked more questions about John Bolton. I asked a question about something completely different, which was Secretary of State's Condoleezza Rice's very strong condemnation of the Belarus government as the last dictatorship in Europe, and certainly it's a dreadful government. And I asked him whether the president was concerned that this statement could be taken as an endorsement or encouragement to a popular uprising in that country. And he basically wasn't concerned at all. Said, you know, that they've made it very clear that they support democracy and free government, you know, free governments and all this kind of thing. And I followed up again by saying even a popular uprising. And he didn't say yes, but he reiterated, basically gave the answer that whatever they want to do.
But, Victoria, wouldn't a popular uprising in Belarus be a good thing?
It would be a good thing.
So, you know, maybe occasionally even your enemies do something useful or good. I took a train through Belarus once, and I can tell you, we didn't stop in Belarus, but when we got to the border, I was taking a train across Europe, and when we got to the border, these guards got on with German shepherds and submachine guns in every car, stationed themselves at the ends of both of the compartments. We couldn't use the bathroom. As we traveled across Belarus, it was about 5 hours to transit across the corner of the country. And the guards had gotten on, you know, they got on, the Belarusian guards or Russian guards or whatever, and then when we got off, and they were absolutely, we're here, and if you move, you're going to get shot, because you're now in Belarus, and all laws are off. And they would not allow us to take photos. One of our kids had a camera with her, and they said, you can't pick that up. Well, anyhow, we're out of time. It's a scary government there, I can tell you.
Absolutely. I just wanted the people of Belarus to be sure that we're with them.
Yes, and to be sure that it really is a popular government that they're bringing into being, not just another puppet of the United States or something. But anyhow, Victoria Jones, thanks so much for the report today. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
29 minutes past the hour.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
We don't need no thought control.
The pill that will help you escape the matrix. It's the Tom Hartman program.
Talk sarcasm in the classroom.
Teachers in the Bush administration.
Teach to leave them kids alone.
Yeah. Now, I could turn that into a commentary on No Child Left Behind or into a commentary on the Bush administration as controllers of the media and preachers to us. We just heard from one of their preachers. Well, Roy in Rio Rancho, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Roy in Rio Rancho, thanks for holding on as long as you have, Roy. I appreciate it.
Well, yeah, I did, and simply because I have had that same conversation, Tom, with my mother. Nothing that Bush does can be wrong.
I've had that same conversation.
A born again Christian.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a born again Christian beats a Catholic hero any day of the week.
Yeah, it's poker. what is the high hand here?
It absolutely drives me nuts. And I was so glad that you got frustrated. And the reason I'm glad that you got frustrated, it takes a little bit of my disappointment that I get frustrated.
Well, at a certain point, we have to say to people.
You just hit the
wall. Yeah, I mean, at a certain point, you have to say to people, you know, okay, I'm not going to be able to change your mind. You're not going to be able to change my mind. We're both humans here. Let's look at the bigger picture. And that's when I got to, okay, if George is right, and if George is a good guy, and if you can believe him because he's a Christian, what if maybe George is being fooled by this guy?
Yeah, well, the way I was looking at it was, if you believe that just because Shrub is a born-again Christian, but yet he goes out and lies to you,
yeah,
how can he be living his faith if he violates one of those Ten Commandments that you're not supposed to violate?
Yeah, in his response, I suspect, to that, and this is why I didn't ask that question, would be, well, that's what politicians do. That's why I went to the Reverend Moon instead,
right?
Because
I love that.
That's a more direct contradiction, as it were, of modern-day Christianity. And one of the deep, dark secrets of the Bush family that is wide open. I mean, it's right out there in the public for anybody to see, and yet it is so underreported. It is so underreported.
This man, and quite frankly, I don't want to assume that he was absolutely lying, but he has to be brain dead if he did not know about the moon. He has to either be purposely lying,
didn't you hear his tonality? I think
he was
genuinely shocked. I think he thought that I was just desperately flailing about trying to find something to. He was like, "Come on, you know," or you know,
which is the
It had to be a joke, he said.
Purposely ignorant.
Yeah,
it
well.
Purposely ignorant.
I don't think it was purposely. I think it's that article, those news stories about that did not appear in the conservative press. By and large, they did not appear in the corporate press. It wasn't on ABC, NBC, CNN, MSNBC, CNBC, or whichever one I've missed. You know,
you mean Rush didn't talk about it, or Dobson didn't talk?
No,
Robertson
none of them.
Hasn't been talking.
None
about
of them.
That?
It's been talked about on liberal talk radio, and it's been on the liberal websites. And there was a small story about it in the New York Times and the Washington Post. And so it's perfectly understandable to me that
actually,
this guy missed
actually,
it.
Actually, it just dawned on me, Tom. Also, one of the things that the listeners ought to pay attention to, you and I know about it. And as you were running through that, I'm running through it with you, and I'm thinking, wait a second, that is right. That's why these folks don't. I know it. It is just so obvious.
They just don't know it.
But you and I work, and the trouble is that I think that there's two big problems. People don't know what they don't know.
Literally.
And too many people know what ain't so.
Yep, yep. I agree.
And that is the two key things that is making this whole discussion so difficult.
Yeah.
And I'm running through all of this seminar that I'm doing tonight with getting people involved and whatnot, and that is kind of the crystal point, is people don't know, and they're only going to know what they believe that they know.
Right, and it's one of the reasons why, and Roy, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate you sharing that with us. But that is one of the reasons why we have to be so upfront and so explicit and so clear in communicating this information and in educating people, laying the information out in a relatively dispassionate fashion so that we can just get into it and say, okay, well, here's what's so. I'll get into some of the details about John Bolton in just a moment. First, let's take a call from Mike in Florida. Hey, Mike.
Hi, Tom. Did your guest say he prayed with George Bush when he was governor of Texas?
He prayed with George Bush when he was president.
Oh, no, when he was governor. I was just wondering.
He prayed with Jeb Bush when Jeb was governor.
Jeb was. Did he call George when George was ready to put Carla Faye Tucker to death and tell him that people change?
That's a good question.
I'm so sick of these people that think that this is a joke and they'll win at all costs. They're tearing down this country. And the world may follow because of it. They really don't understand the seriousness of the situation. And as long as they win, they'll protect their guy at all costs. And I'm just tired of it.
Yeah. Well, welcome to the club, Mike. Welcome to the club. I'm right there. Although at the same time, I'm giving this guy, at some level, you know, you have to just understand there's human nature involved here. And I'm convinced that within the conservative movement there are a substantial number of people who are really and truly, as in any political movement, really and truly manipulators, really and truly liars, really and truly power seekers. I believe that John Bolton is one of those people. And there are the true believers. There are the people who come along because they actually truly believe what the leaders are saying. And I think that the guy that we had on before, Jerome Corzi, who was in the first hour, in my opinion, is one of the folks who goes out and will willingly distort the truth. And the evidence of that is in his book on the Swift Boats and all of those, you know, media presentations and whatnot that he did and all the things he said. And so I'm suspicious of his word, frankly. But this fellow, O'Neill, it was his first name, O'Neill Dozier, Reverend O'Neill Dozier, I think that he really believes what he's saying. He really does. And that's perhaps even scarier. But I find it hard to get angry with him. I want to awaken him. I wish I could figure out a way to reach out to this guy. And maybe I planted a seed. Maybe now he's going to go back and he's going to say, what's this about Reverend Moon? And he might do a little bit of internet search, or he might ask a few questions, and he might start learning about this. And if he does, he might start questioning the born-again credentials of the Bush family or of George W. And then he might start realizing that he's had the wool pulled over his eyes. By getting angry at people and kicking them or smack them in the face or whatever, you're not going to change them. You're not going to change them. In fact, what you do is you make them even more of however they were. Bolton's inability to accept facts when they challenge his agenda has caused serious harm to American security. This is the bottom line for me. The bottom line for me is not is Bolton a good man or a bad man, not is George Bush lying to us again or not. I mean, when his lips move, right? The bottom line for me is, what's the best thing for the nation that I love, that I live in, that I was born in, that I grew up in, and that I hope to continue living in, that my children live in? What is the best thing for this nation? And Bolton's, as the American Progress Action.org site website, the American Progress Action Fund has put together a really good summary of some of John Bolton's, what do you call it, skills, positions. Bolton's inability to accept facts and the challenge's agenda has caused serious harm to American security, they note. And they add, Bolton sought to replace two CIA analysts. There were these two folks who were working for him. Right? And they and he had this half-baked theory that Fidel Castro was down there in Cuba coming up with germ warfare to take out the United States. Now, first of all, even if Fidel Castro was the most evil man on the planet, and I do believe that Fidel Castro is a relatively bad guy, anybody who will not let people speak out, anybody who puts people in prison for opposing them, I'm sorry, that's not my kind of guy. Fidel Castro is not my kind of guy. Maybe he's got a great health system there. That's not enough. I still am no fan of Fidel Castro. Period. End of discussion. But he is, even if he had the mind power of Genghis Khan and the insanity of Hitler and Stalin, he wouldn't be stupid enough to attack a country with germ warfare that is only 90 miles away from his own border. Germs travel! And so the CIA analyst said, you really want to tell the American people that Fidel Castro is coming up with germ warfare against the United States? We have no evidence of this. We have lots of spies in Cuba. I can tell you the Cuban-American community is sending enormous quantities of money back to Cuba. It's one of the major things that is, I'm not sure major, but one of the significant things that has helped keep the Cuban economy afloat for many, many years, low these many years. And a lot of that money is going to people in Cuba who are spies for the United States. Directly or indirectly. They may simply be talking to Uncle Mariel every Thursday or Uncle Jose or whatever. And, well, how's everything? What's going on with this? And, you know, just getting the news. Who knows? And then there are others who are actual spies. But we know really pretty much what's going on in Cuba. We actually have, that's one of those few nations where we actually have good human intelligence. And so we use that human intelligence to find out what's happening down there. And what do we find out? That Cuba is not engaged in a germ warfare program. Never has been. It's not their thing. They were willing to take nuclear missiles from the Soviet Union at one time. That's about as far off as it gets. Basically, Castro's concerns have been economic and self-defense. He wants to defend himself against an attack by the United States. After all, this is a guy we tried to put a depilatory in his wetsuit so that his beard would fall off. We sent him exploding cigars. We tried to poison him on two different occasions, once through his mistress, once through a U.S. ambassador. The list goes on and on and on. He has good reason to be wary of us. But to attack us with germ warfare, well, it turns out, according to the CIA, no, ain't happening. And so these analysts for the CIA, they come to Bolton, and Bolton says, I know Castro's got germ warfare. Well, how do you know? Well, I who knows how he knew? Maybe he dreamed it the night before. Maybe he's clairvoyant. Maybe he took one of those courses in remote viewing that they've got in the New Age classes in the schools where you can figure out what's going on in that room over there. They actually say that a lot of this was originally developed by the CIA, by the way, one of the main guys who's running around the country teaching remote viewing. His claim to fame is that he developed it and taught it for the CIA. The Soviets, we know, were doing this. So maybe Bolton has figured out remote viewing. Maybe he can know what's going on or he thinks he can know what's going on in some lab in Cuba. And so he comes to the CIA and he says, I've got this theory or I've got this knowledge because I can do remote viewing or whatever it is. They're doing germ warfare down there. And the CIA checks it out and they come back and they say, John, sorry to tell you this, but you're full of beans. Ain't so. No germs. So what does he do? He tries to get the guys fired. He harasses them. He harangues them. He yells at them. And then he tries to get them fired. On multiple, in addition to this, on multiple occasions, Bolton refused to forward information vital to U.S. strategies on Iran to Secretary of State Colin Powell, his boss's boss's boss, delaying intelligence from getting through for weeks, or in some instances, not at all. Don't you find it interesting that Colin Powell has not spoken out in favor of John Bolton's nomination? Here you have the former Secretary of State, who used to be his boss. You would think that if somebody wanted a job reference, that they would ask their boss for one. Colin Powell, not one word. Center for American Progress also notes, Bolton's management and style and temperament are highly suspect for the world's leading deliberative body. As Senator Chuck Hagel, a leading Republican on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, said this weekend, quote, "I have been troubled with more and more allegations, revelations coming out about his style, his method of operating. To intimidate or bully people is something that is not what we want in our government, especially at the very senior, responsible, high-level positions." Lawrence Wilkerson, the chief of staff for Bolton's previous boss, former Secretary of State Colin Powell, weighed in on Bolton's qualifications. He said, and I quote, this is the former Secretary for former Secretary of State Colin Powell, the chief of staff for former Secretary of State Colin Powell, says about John Bolton, do I think John Bolton would make a good ambassador to the United Nations? Absolutely not. He is incapable of listening to people and taking into account their views. He would be an abysmal ambassador. An abysmal ambassador. Bolton has shown a disdain for democracy throughout his career. As Undersecretary for Arms Control and International Security, Bolton heightened existing tensions with Iran and North Korea and failed to stop their attempts to develop nuclear weapons programs. He wants to stop germ warfare that doesn't exist in Cuba, but he doesn't want to stop, or was unsuccessful in stopping, real nuclear weapons programs in Iran and North Korea. In both cases, Bolton preferred to insult and degrade rather than find real solutions to genuine proliferation concerns. Insulting Kim Jong-il, insulting the Iranians, his inability to function as a true diplomat has hindered America's security efforts. That's the bottom line for me. I want my nation to be well represented at the United Nations. I want to know that our country is well represented. I want to know that we don't have some guy at the UN who, because his temper pops, is going to start World War III. I don't want some guy at the UN who's going to go off half-cocked. I don't want some guy at the UN who thinks that he doesn't have to pass information back to us that he's learned there, or pass information to the UN that he's learned here that might alter history in a way that might not be desirable for the rest of us or for the planet, simply because his client, whether it's this corporation in the case of chasing this woman around, or the U.S. government doesn't like it, or George Bush doesn't like it.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
You know, some things in life are bad. They can really make you mad.
Yeah, like Bolton.
And other things just make you swear and curse.
Like Bush and DeLay.
When you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble, give a whistle. This'll help things turn out for the best.
And
always look on the bright side of life.
I'll tell you, what's the bright side of this? The bright side of this is that another generation has learned the lesson. I'm telling you, if George Bush had not come along and taken off the mask and let us see what's really going on, there are so many Americans who would have no idea what the true conservative agenda was or is. There are so many Americans who would have no idea that compassionate conservatism means cut people off Social Security because it's socialism. Get rid of Medicare or screw it up so badly that it'll self-destruct by handing off hundreds of billions of dollars to the pharmaceutical companies because it's welfare and it's socialism. Get rid of and have wars in other countries because they have oil and we can make a lot of money off the oil and we've got to control the oil. And we've got to control the oil because we've got to have our Hummers and we've got to have our Hummers because the company, all these companies Contribute money to us. America, I'm telling you, America is waking up. George Bush has a 44% approval rating. Congress has a 33% approval rating. Congress is Republican-controlled, both the House and the Senate. America is waking up, and it's really a truly a marvelous thing. And more to come, no doubt. Now, back to John Bolton, just to wrap our hour up here. John Bolton ignored his responsibility to stop the spread of dangerous nuclear weapons and materials. This is from the Center for American Progress. As Undersecretary for Arms Control and International Security, Bolton killed an international ban on the production of nuclear materials and opposes the international ban on nuclear testing. Why would he do this? Why would he do this? Because in his mind, if you're going to have rules that we have to live by and they have to live by, but we have to live by them, then that's not good. He likes to have, he's a two set of rules kind of guy. There's in John Bolton's mind, there's one set of rules for him and his bunch, and there's another set of rules for the world. And anything that comes along that says, hey, we all have to live by the same set of rules, that's something in John Bolton's mind that is unacceptable. Under Bolton's direction, according to a Harvard University study that was published last September, keep in mind, this guy was the Undersecretary for Arms Control and International Security. He was the guy in charge of making sure that all around the world there is not an increase in nuclear weapons and that the world is a more secure place. That was his job. And according to a Harvard University study published last September, under Bolton's direction, less fissile materials were secured in the 2 years after September 11 than in the 2 years before. And it's not because there was less fissile material. Fissile, that's, you know, stuff that can blow up, stuff that can radioactively do what radioactive stuff does. Fission. Atoms breaking apart. If that happens fast enough to enough of them, you have nuclear explosions. Less fissile materials were secured in the 2 years after September 11 than in the 2 years before. And that those 2 years after September 11 were the 2 years that John Bolton was in charge of securing this stuff. Joseph Ciricioni of the Carnegie Endowment summarized Bolton's dangerous and ineffective nonproliferation record as follows. Bolton, quote, Bolton has been totally unapologetic for his radical prescription for dealing with the proliferation threat. The main problem is it hasn't worked anywhere. Well, something doesn't work. Let's put the guy in charge. That's the official Bush policy. Condi Rice screwed up and we had 9/11. Promote her. Gonzalez screwed up. We're torturing prisoners. Promote him. We've got to get out and vote, folks.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.